The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Mark Newman from the Triangle Radio Reading Service. For the next half hour, I will share with you information from various medical sources. Eat for your brain, from Parade Magazine. What you eat is probably the number one risk factor for Alzheimer's that you can easily affect. We asked Max Lugavere, co-author with Paul Gruhl, MD, of Genius Foods, A Guide to the Nutrition of Optimizing Brain Function and Minimizing Dementia Risk, to pick his 10 favorite weapons against cognitive mediocrity and decay. Number one, extra virgin olive oil. Color doesn't matter, but look for one with a grassy and peppery, never greasy taste. Skip canola, corn, vegetable, grapeseed, and peanut oils. Number two, avocados. Since they have the highest total fat-protecting capacity of any fruit or veggie, he eats half an avocado or more per day in salads, eggs, and even smoothies. Blueberries. Their protective compounds called anthocyanins can cross the blood-brain barrier, directly reaching the brain's memory center. Frozen is A-okay. Four, dark chocolate. Get your protective flavonoids in bars with more than 80% cocoa content that haven't been processed by alkali, which is Dutch processing. Number five, eggs. Four words, says Lugarev. Eat the yolks, folks. Six, grass-fed beef. Meat delivers essential minerals, vitamins, and omega-3 fats the brain needs, but most cows not pasture-raised are fed too many antibiotics and crud. Seven, dark leafy greens. Eat one fatty salad a day. Organic dark leafy greens like kale, arugula, or spinach, douse with extra virgin olive oil. Eight, broccoli. The whole cruciferous fam, Brussels sprouts, cabbage, or family, Brussels sprouts, cabbage, arugula, bok choy, kale, contains sulforaphane, a compound that helps mop up damaging oxidative stress. Nine, wild salmon. It's low in mercury, high in protective EPA and DHA, omega-3 fats. And finally, number 10, almonds. Ideally, eat them raw or dry roasted, not oil roasted. From the Mayo Clinic Health Letter, juicing, squeezing out the pros and cons. There's nothing like a glass of freshly squeezed fruit juice to make a breakfast feel complete. Juicing, extracting the juice from fresh fruits and vegetables, is popular with many Americans. But is it as healthy as proclaimed? Novelty in nutrition. Juicing can be a fun and portable way to add nutrition to your diet. If you struggle to eat the recommended 5 to 9 servings of fruits and vegetables each day, juicing can help you get there. The good news is that juice contains most of the vitamins, minerals, and plant chemicals, or phytonutrients, found in whole fruit. Juicing may also help you incorporate a broader variety of fruits and vegetables in your diet, such as kale, spinach, or tropical fruits. Not equal to whole foods. However, juice shouldn't be the only way to get these nutrients. Whole fruits and vegetables also contain healthy fiber, much of which is lost during juicing, especially if the skin and pulp are removed. Dietary fiber not only aids in digestion, but also may help improve blood cholesterol levels and lower the risk of heart disease. Fiber also helps you feel full, which can help with weight control. Some promote juicing as a quick way to lose weight. However, a diet containing only fruits and vegetables isn't balanced. Be sure you're also meeting your needs for fiber, protein, calcium, iron, and healthy fats. You can do this by incorporating juicing into a healthy eating plan that includes a variety of whole grains, low-fat dairy products, lean protein sources, and whole fruits and vegetables. Is it right for you? While juicing in moderation is generally healthy, certain types of juice may not be appropriate for everyone. A juice made of mostly fruits can be high in carbohydrates and sugars, which can influence blood sugar levels. For people with kidney disease, fruits that are high in potassium, such as melons and bananas, can cause complications and may need to be avoided. Juicing also can be a significant source of calories, depending on the contents and the portion size you consume. Without the fiber to keep you feeling full, you may find that you're hungry sooner. And add these up and you have a recipe for potential weight gain if not kept in check. If you're not sure whether juicing is a healthy option for you, talk to your doctor or dietitian. Getting the most from your juice. Here are the steps you can take to make sure your juice is as healthy as possible. Limit added sugars. Some juice recipes call for sugar, honey, syrup, and other added sweeteners. Since the typical American diet already includes an overabundance of added sugars, try to eliminate these additions or at least keep them to a minimum. Added sugars contribute to calories and weight gain. They're especially common in store-bought fruit drinks. Consider blending. Rather than extracting juice, blending the edible parts of fruits produces a drink that contains more fiber and other healthy nutrients. If the result is too thick, add a little water. Handle produce safely. Wash all fruits and vegetables thoroughly before use. Even if you plan to peel the produce, wash it first so the dirt and bacteria aren't transferred. Take extra caution with pre-cut fruits and vegetables of any kind of sprout, which are more likely to harbor dangerous bacteria such as E. coli. Use the pulp elsewhere. Try adding the leftover pulp from your juicing to soups or baked goods to increase the fiber in your diet. And then finally, opt for pasteurized juice. When buying juice from a store, choose pasteurized juice when possible to prevent the likelihood of foodborne illness. Most of the juice sold in stores is pasteurized to kill harmful bacteria. Products that aren't pasteurized should be refrigerated and are required to carry a warning label. Since juice sold in restaurants isn't subject to the same labeling, don't hesitate to ask if you're unsure if the product has been pasteurized. Below is a recipe you can make at home that combines fruits and spinach in a tasty smoothie. It's called a green smoothie. The ingredients, one banana, a half a cup of strawberries, a half a cup of other berries like blueberries or blackberries, juice of one lemon, 2 ounces fresh raw baby spinach, 1 tablespoon of fresh mint, 1 cup of cold water or ice. Directions, place all the ingredients in a juicer or a blender and puree. Serves 4. The nutritional analysis, calories are only 52. Total fat is a trace. Total cholesterol, 0. Sodium, 14 milligrams. Carbohydrates, 12 grams. Fiber, 2 grams. Protein, just 1 gram. Carotid artery disease. Reducing stroke risk. Mayo Health letter. Your doctor has listened to the side of your neck with a stethoscope in the past. You never knew why, but now you do. Your doctor reports hearing a whooshing noise, something called a bruit, that raises concern that the main carotid artery supplying blood to your brain may be clogging up. This can increase your risk of a stroke, which occurs when the blood supply to part of the brain is interrupted or severely reduced, depriving brain tissue of oxygen and nutrients. Clogging of one or both carotid artery stenosis, is the cause of about 8 to 15% of the most common type of stroke called an ischemic stroke. A stroke, a clear sign. Carotid artery stenosis develops slowly over time. It results from damage to the inner linings of arteries and collections of fatty deposits or plaque that gradually stiffen, clog, and narrow the carotid artery. Carotid artery stenosis causes blood flow to be more turbulent, increasing the risk of blood clots, which can block the blood flow to part of the brain. Stenosis is generally a silent process, and the first symptoms experienced may be a stroke or temporary stroke-like symptoms that quickly go away, known as a transient ischemic attack, or TIA. The signs and symptoms of a stroke, or TIA, come on suddenly. Seek immediate emergency care for yourself or someone else if you notice numbness, weakness, or paralysis on one side of the face or body, difficulty speaking or trouble understanding others, trouble with blurred, decreased, or double vision, dizziness, trouble walking or loss of balance or coordination, a sudden severe thunderclap headache. After the immediate threat of stroke or TIA has been addressed, an evaluation of potential causes usually begins. This includes evaluating the carotid arteries for narrowing. At risk but feel fine. Widespread screening for carotid artery disease in people with no symptoms of stroke or TIA is not recommended. People who are at high risk of carotid artery disease may be considered for screening with ultrasound imaging. This may include those with peripheral artery disease, which is hardening and narrowing of arteries in the legs, or less commonly the arms, coronary artery disease, a bulging of the large artery in the abdomen, aortic aneurysm, that's caused in part by hardening and narrowing of the artery, the presence of a bruit when your doctor listens to your carotid artery with stethoscope. Two or more of the following risk factors for artery disease: high blood pressure or hypertension, unfavorable cholesterol levels, smoking, or a family history of stroke or other diseases related to hardening of the arteries. Other risk factors that may be taken in consideration include diabetes, obesity, and a lack of physical fitness. If screening with ultrasound turns up a potential problem, additional imaging tests may be done to further evaluate the severity of the artery narrowing. Medical treatment for all. Medical therapy is a nearly universal component of carotid artery disease treatment. The goal is to prevent development of a harmful blood clot and to slow or stop, or sometimes even partially reverse, the process of artery narrowing. Steps for doing so are often pursued rigorously and include taking a drug, typically aspirin, to prevent clots. A low dose of daily aspirin reduces future stroke risk in those who have had a previous stroke or TIA. The stroke-reducing benefit for those who haven't had a previous stroke or TIA is less certain. However, it's typically recommended anyway to decrease the risk of a heart attack and possibly for stroke risk reduction. Controlling high blood pressure. Healthy lifestyle measures are combined with medication that can lower blood pressure. Target blood pressure readings vary, but typically below 140 over 90 millimeters of mercury. Optimizing cholesterol levels. Drugs often in the statin class are likely used to lower levels of low-density lipoprotein, or LDL, the bad cholesterol. In many cases, the reduction goal levels are very low. In addition to the primary health targets already mentioned, other steps for stroke risk reduction include eating a healthy diet that emphasizes minimally processed plant foods, lean or plant-based protein, sources of healthy fats such as nuts, seeds, and salmon, and lowering salt intake. Number two, not smoking. Next, getting at least 30 minutes of moderately intense exercise most days of the week. Next, losing weight if you're overweight or obese. Treating sleep apnea if you have this nighttime breathing disorder. Limiting alcohol consumption to one drink a day if you're over 65. Managing blood sugar levels if you have prediabetes or diabetes. Weighing the risks. Although circumstances and decisions vary, treating stenosis with surgery or angioplasty and stenting is often recommended if you have had a stroke or TIA and have 70 to 99% blockage of the carotid artery. And finally, often not recommended if you have had a stroke or TIA and have less than 50% blockage of the carotid artery. It's also generally not recommended for those who have never had a stroke or TIA if they have carotid artery disease, but less than 60% blockage of the carotid artery. Gray areas in which decision-making is less clear include those who have had a stroke or a TIA and have 50 to 69% blockage of the carotid artery, and those with carotid artery disease who have never had a stroke or TIA with 60% or greater blockage. Research indicates that surgery in these two gray area groups can result in a modest reduction in future stroke risk. However, fairly recent improvements in intensive medical therapy may offer the same benefits of surgery and procedures for these groups without the same associated risks of surgery. These areas of uncertainty are under evaluation in several important trials. One trial called the CREST, CREST-2 trial, is led by Mayo Clinic and funded by the National Institutes of Health. The study is being conducted at more than 100 centers in North America and is still enrolling participants who have high-grade carotid artery disease but have not had a stroke or TIA. For more information, visit www.crest2trial.org. Treatment options. The two procedures used to treat a narrowing of the carotid artery include carotid endarterectomy. An incision is made in the neck to expose the carotid artery. The artery is opened, an artery narrowing plaque is removed. The incision is then closed back up. Angioplasty and stenting. Through a tiny incision, a balloon-tipped tube or catheter is maneuvered into the narrow area of the carotid artery. The balloon is inflated to compress the plaque against the artery wall. A stent is then placed in the artery to keep it propped open. Ongoing research may clarify which patients may benefit from which of these procedures. For many people, available evidence indicates that the options are fairly equal in terms of the risk of the procedure and the benefit in stroke risk reduction. However, the chart below depicts situations in which one procedure is preferred over the other, and those that meet the requirement for intervention. In carotid endarterectomy, an incision is made in the neck to expose the artery. The artery is opened, then the artery narrowing plaque is removed. Determining the right procedure. Carotid endarterectomy is often indicated for people 70 or older, those having surgery within 2 weeks and after a stroke or TIA, those with more complicated plaque, and those at increased risk of surgery-related stroke. Angioplasty and stenting is often indicated for repeat narrowing that occurs after carotid endarterectomy, those with altered neck anatomy that makes surgery more difficult, such as past neck radiation or surgery, and those at increased risk of surgery-related heart attack. Health tips. Keep calm and breathe. When you feel anxious or stressed, something as natural as breathing can serve as a tool to relax your mind and body. Deep breathing exercises, also called diaphragmatic breathing or relaxed breathing, can help slow down your breathing and keep it in a regular flow. This, in turn, settles your nervous system and increases feelings of calm. Studies also suggest that deep breathing can have the immediate effects of lowering your blood pressure and regulating your heart rate. Deep breathing draws on the body's dominant breathing muscle, your diaphragm, rather than your chest muscles, to more effectively pull oxygen into your body. To practice deep breathing, settle into a comfortable position, sit upright or straight in a chair with your feet flat on the floor, or lie down flat. Close your eyes or lower your gaze and place one hand over your belly. Take a deep breath in through your nose, sending it through the back of your throat and down your belly. Allow your belly to expand. Notice how the hand on your belly gently rises. Then let your abdomen slowly deflate as you breathe out. Do this again several times, gradually lengthening the amount of time you inhale and exhale. Direct your breath into your upper back. Let your ribs spread and then relax with each breath in and out. Do this for another 3 or 4 breaths. Avoid forcing your breath in and out. Let it flow naturally. Low sex drive in women. Rediscovering lost libido. Getting older doesn't mean an end to your sex life, but for women dealing with low sex drive or libido, it can sometimes feel that way. Many women experience reduced sexual desire as they go through menopause or experience a major life event, such as the loss of a spouse or diagnosis of a chronic illness. However, if low libido is persistent, it may be a sign of a condition known as hypoactive sexual desire disorder. Symptoms of this condition include a loss of interest in any type of sexual activity, infrequent or complete lack of sexual thoughts, and emotional distress because of the lack of sexual activity and thoughts. In one survey, 70% of postmenopausal women reported that their relationship with their partner suffered, as did their body image and confidence, because of their low libido. Women usually experience changes in sexual desire after menopause, undergoing a more responsive pattern compared with spontaneous pattern before menopause. Many women experience desire only after arousal, and more stimulation may be required to become sufficiently aroused. Despite the emotional impact, low libido can have on women. Many don't discuss the topic with their doctors. This may be because they chalk it up to a normal part of aging, they're too embarrassed, or they have other medical issues they feel are more important. However, if you're upset by your lack of interest in sex, it may be time to talk with your doctor. Contributing factors. Multiple factors can contribute to low libido in women. An imbalance in the chemical messengers or neurotransmitters that increase sexual desire and those that inhibit it are thought to be the underlying cause. Other factors that can hamper desire include menopause. Estrogen levels drop during transition to menopause, which can result in decreased sensation, thinning of the vaginal tissues, and a decrease in natural lubrication. These changes can result in discomfort or even pain with sexual activity. Cardiovascular problems. Diabetes, high blood pressure, and high cholesterol are all risk factors for vascular disease, which can restrict normal blood flow to the genital areas. Joint pain. Any condition that affects the joints, such as osteoarthritis and rheumatoid arthritis, may hinder movement and cause pain with sexual activity. You may have difficulty with comfortable positioning for sexual activity if you have had joint surgery. Sleep issues. Sleep disturbances and inadequate sleep have been linked to low sexual desire and impaired genital response. Medication side effects. Older adults tend to take more medications, which can interfere with sexuality. Prescription medications such as antidepressants, anti-seizure medicines, high blood pressure drugs, pain medications, and anti-estrogen therapy used by some women who've had breast cancer can reduce libido. Psychological issues. Stress, anxiety, depression can all take a toll on sex drive. Weight gain and overall changes in the shape of your body can affect how desirable you feel. Socio-cultural issues, lack of sex education, as well as cultural and familial norms and values, can negatively affect sexual desire. Relationship issues, lack of a partner, poor relationship, communication issues, and partner sexual dysfunction can contribute to low libido. That loving feeling. Communication is important in addressing sexual issues. That means talking to both your partner and your doctor. Your doctor may perform a pelvic exam to look for changes, such as thinning of vaginal tissue, that could cause sexual pain. Blood tests may be ordered to check for conditions that can affect sex drive, such as thyroid disease or diabetes. If an underlying medical or psychological condition or relationship factor is contributing to your low sex drive, addressing it may help give your libido a boost. Other recommendations for remedying low sex drive include over-the-counter lubricants. To tackle vaginal dryness, try using non-prescription moisturizer on a regular basis and a water or silicone-based lubricant for sexual activity. Counseling. A psychologist or sex therapist can help address relationship issues and sexual concerns and offer recommendations for improving communication and intimacy. Cognitive behavioral therapy also may be of help, as may be couples counseling. Review medications. If any of your medications cause sexual side effects, your doctor may suggest changes to your regimen. For example, the antidepressant Wellbutrin and others is less likely to cause sexual dysfunction, and for some women may be an alternative to other antidepressants that more commonly cause sexual dysfunction. Hormone therapy. Estrogen can improve mood and sexual response. It can be prescribed in a variety of forms, such as through transdermal patches, gels, sprays, tablets, vaginal rings, creams, and suppositories. Estrogen may be given to treat the whole body or as a targeted therapy that's not absorbed into the whole body. Estrogen hormone therapy used systemically may carry risks for certain women, including those with a history of breast cancer. However, low-dose vaginal estrogen is minimally absorbed and avoids many of the concerns about the use of systemic hormone therapy. Other options for treatment of vaginal dryness and urinary symptoms include the oral medication ospermectin, which is a selective estrogen receptor modulator. Another option for management of vaginal dryness is intravaginal prestosterone or Intrarosa, flibanserin or ADI. This is the first medication approved to treat hypoactive sexual desire disorder in women. Addy targets the chemical messengers responsible for inhibiting sexual desire. Currently, the drug is approved for premenopausal women. However, some research has suggested that it could also be effective for postmenopausal women. Studies indicate that taking the medication results in a modest increase in additional satisfying sexual events. Potential side effects include low blood pressure, dizziness, fainting, nausea, fatigue, and headaches, particularly if mixed with alcohol. Thus, in order to take this drug, refrain from alcohol. Lifestyle changes. Regular exercise, not smoking, and getting enough sleep can help improve sexual desire through various mechanisms. Finding ways to cope with stress can enhance your sex drive. Make it a date. Don't be worried if sex isn't as spontaneous as it was when you were younger. There's nothing wrong with making time for intimacy by actually putting it on your calendar. You can make up for the lack of spontaneity by increasing novelty, trying different times of the day and different locations, for example. Finally, redefine intimacy. Medical conditions may necessitate altering expectations. In some cases, redefining intimacy may be needed. Touching, hugging, kissing, and other signs of affection and tenderness can also be extremely gratifying. In fact, among older adults, affection can be more important than sexual activity. Most adults remain sexually active into advanced old age, particularly if their health remains good. Look for ways to work around obstacles and still enjoy a satisfying intimate relationship with your partner. News and our views. Coffee can be part of a healthy diet. Coffee has acquired some new shine as a number of reports tout the health benefits of the habit. 3 out of 4 Americans drink coffee, and about half of them drink it every day. 2 studies published last summer in the Annals of Internal Medicine suggest that coffee may help you live longer, and association is held across several countries and ethnicities. One of the studies was conducted in 10 European countries over 16 years. The researchers found a higher consumption of coffee was associated with a lower risk of death, particularly deaths related to liver or cardiovascular diseases. Coffee drinkers tended to show signs of better liver function and less inflammation. Coffee contains compounds such as polyphenols and antioxidant properties. These could have a protective effect against insulin resistance and inflammation. It's difficult to say if prolonged life is a direct effect of drinking coffee or merely an association. While it's too soon to recommend drinking coffee solely to lengthen life, these studies do reinforce drinking coffee as part of a healthy diet. If you suffer negative side effects of caffeine, such as insomnia, heartburn, anxiety, or jitteriness, try decaffeinated coffee. If you enjoy coffee, there appears to be no reason to stop drinking it in moderation. Well, we have run out of time for today's episode of Health Issues. Be sure to listen at the same time next week. We hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Mark Newman, reading for the Triangle Radio Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This broadcast is readily available as a podcast after the broadcast at our website, TriangleReadingService.org. So long until next time. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138 and stay healthy.